our workshop on student support. Without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to our first speaker, who is Magnolia Hood from the FSU Counseling Center. So you can go ahead and take it away.
All right, so good afternoon, everyone. Hopefully everybody is having a good day. If not, don't worry about it. It's almost over and tomorrow is Friday. So you can't really just let's let it just ride. Let's get through the rest of this and we can have our good day on tomorrow because it'll be Friday. I am going to share my screen with you and introduce myself a little bit. My name is Magnolia Hood. And like Katie said, I am one of the staff counselors at the Counseling Center. I am a Midwest girl at heart. I just moved here 2 years ago and I'm still trying to figure out why did I move here. And I'm also having a great time being here. I got my my master's from Southern Illinois University in Southern Illinois. And so usually nobody knows what that is either. So it's all good. It's okay. But I am going to talk to you a little bit about stress. If you have questions, you can put those questions in the chat or you can you can just yell out your question. It's okay. I know you can't really do that in class, but here you can if you like. But I'm just going to go through some signs and symptoms of stress. And then we'll talk a little bit about how can you manage your stress? Because it's manageable. It just depends on how you choose to do so, okay? So, find my cursor here. So like I said, I'm gonna be giving you an overview of it. So if you need any specific information, like I said, feel free to ask. And we will talk about what good stress is and bad stress because those are a thing. And then we'll talk about how does your body respond to stress. So if you are taking notes, you might want to take notes of like, how do I know if I'm stressed? And then we'll talk about what that will look like. And then we'll talk about what do I do to manage it. So managing stress can look very, very different depending on your likes, your hobbies, and your goals for the future, okay? So when we think about stress in itself, basically, stress is your reaction to an environmental challenge or your reaction to overwhelming or overarching demands or your reaction to any type of pressures. So anytime the challenge, demand, or pressure exceeds your ability to manage it, that is just called stress. And so stress can be physical. We know that when we, pull a muscle out or, have some kind of physical issue in our body, that can be stress too, but we can feel it physically. We can feel it emotionally. We can feel it mentally. And then a lot of times the manifestation of stress comes out behaviorally and relationally. Does that make sense to everybody? So again, you can feel it in your physical body. You can feel it in your emotions. You can feel it mentally, and we'll talk about what that looks like. And then it manifests, we will know, somebody else will know that you're stressed because of behavioral changes or relational changes. And so, like I said before, there is a difference between good stress and bad stress. If you look at this figure here, it's basically giving you an understanding of how to know when you are in the middle of bad stress or when you're having good stress. So eustress is that shaded part in the middle. And that's when, oh, it's my birthday. I'm ready to turn up. That's good stress. Or I'm so excited because, Christmas is coming. That's good stress. Or, oh my gosh, I'm so excited that, my family's coming to visit. Good stress. These are things that you might have some similar reactions in your body, in your mind, all that good stuff, but it's good stress. It's the stress that, if we think about good stress also, good stress is, oh my gosh, I have a test coming up. And so what do? You study. So you were feeling stressed, but as a result of that stress, you studied. That's good stress, no problem. then bad stress, which we call the distress, is when, and that's on the outside, if you notice that when you have either too little or too much, where you shut down because you feel too stressed, or when you are not able to stay focused in a class or have good conversations. You know, you might have a conversation with somebody and you just like, you hear, but you is all the way everywhere else. That is also a sign or symptom of stress. But then also there's burnout. Burnout and shutdown are not the same thing. So those are two separate things, but burnout and just struggling to deal, whether that's in relationships. So like I said, it can come out in your relationships. You might start to have some changes or some, you know, some of our real relationships gets rearranged, or behaviorally, it's hard to make a decision, or you might not be making good decisions. So when we're thinking about stress, good stress is the stress that makes you focus. Good stress is the stress that causes you to have an action, study, you know, protect yourself, those kinds of stress. Or the bad stress, you know, it's bad stress when it impacts you being able to deal, to study, to do the things that you want to do or the things that you would usually do. So that's the difference between good stress and bad stress. As I said before, good stress is positive. It's invigorating. You might, you know, those of you that are athletic, anytime like, you know, you get nervous or anxious when it's time to get out on the field or to do whatever your sport is, you get a lot of confidence when you get out there and kill it. You have high self-esteem. That's good stress. So we can deal with that. But then the bad stress, the distress, is again when it's, you know, your confidence is lower, your self-esteem is lower. You might be critical of yourself. You might be, you know, just not dealing the way you used to deal. You realize that, you know, usually you don't mind watching, you know, certain shows or certain movies, but now like you're crying and you don't even know why you're crying, or, you know, you're angry and you don't know why you're angry. It's affecting your, you know, relationships with your roommates, or you're sitting in class and you're like, what is this? What am I doing here? Why don't I just leave? And that kind of thing, that is the distress or the bad stress. And so when we think about, we talked about before, how there can be some physical signs of stress, physical signs in your body. When you think about stress in your body, you can experience stress from the top of your head to the sole of your feet. It can come out in aches and pains. It can come out in stomach cramps, gastric problems, overeating or undereating. Your immune system is impacted. A lot of times we don't realize how our bodies are synced with our emotions. Our bodies are synced with our environment that way. You talk about hypertension, high blood pressure, increased heart rate, high cholesterol, and then the mood places, the emotional spaces. We're talking about increase in anger, increase in depression, irritability. You lose energy. You're just kind of tired all the time. Another thing we talk about often is stress secretes a hormone called cortisol. And cortisol is basically what, if you have too much of it, it will begin to attack different parts of your body. So that's where a lot of these physical stress signals come up, because the cortisol is starting to impact that place. It start to, you know, you start to notice that. Some of us, we may not have any of the, we might not have heart problems or things like that, but we notice like, oh man, if I get stressed, I just get these head colds that just happens, or I feel sluggish and I feel tired all the time. And that's because you're having an inability to fight some kind of illness. Sometimes we notice that we don't eat, or sometimes we notice we eat everything. And that is a gastric issue. A lot of times we think our emotional problems are just in our emotions, but a lot of our emotional problems go back to our gut. So good gut health, a lot of times is good emotional and mental health. So when we think about stress, how it happens. And this says particular grad students, but take yourself out of grad student mode. Just be a student. Let's just be a student, any kind of student. You can be a student on scholarship or not on scholarship. When we think about the stressors, these are a lot of the things that our students come in and tell us about. But if there aren't, if you, you know, are looking at this diagram, what might be a stressor that's not on here? Do you all notice that there is a stressor that you know of that's not on here? Anybody know? Anybody got anything else to add to this?
Hi. One for me particularly is I have a lot of chronic health issues that make things difficult for me to get things done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, chronic health issues, definitely. Another stressor. Yeah. Anybody else?
Family responsibilities.
Yes, family. And I used to have that on here. I took it off. Yeah, family. Like, you might be at school, but they come with you. Even if they might not be here in person, they are here. They're in your mind and your heart. You know, you packed up your refrigerator, you packed up your clothes, and you packed up your people. You brought them with you in some way. Yep.
Global pandemics.
Go for it. What'd somebody say?
I said global pandemics.
Yes. who would have known, right? Who would have known? Yeah, like, it's not just what's happening to us, you know, here, but what's happening outside of us now. Something that used to not even be our problem, it's not even in our backyard, it's sitting in our living room right next to us on the couch. Like, the things that have happened around the world have definitely impacted us, have definitely impacted us. And for some of our, you know, students, and a number of our students, whether they are distance learning students or they're students on campus, it brought another surge of anxiety or stress when we had certain issues in leadership, right? Certain issues in leadership in our country, it put us all on high alert. We're all on high alert. We're all trying to figure out what do we do. And that's from administration, even down to our programs and our teachers and instructors, right? They were trying to figure out, okay, how do we move things around? That is not good stress. Let me say that. Like, even though it pushed us into action, that wasn't good stress. That was bad stress. It was a stressor for all of us, for the whole community when it came to the education system. And so what do we do when we realize, like, if you're thinking about stress, if you know that you feel stressed or you're having experiences that may seem like stress, and you do that check, is this you stress, the good stress, or is this the distress? Is this the bad stress? We're gonna talk about these things in a systemic way. And so number one is healthy living. You know, healthy living is, what is your lifestyle like? Some of us have lifestyles that are conducive to having good stress management, and some of us are not. And really, when we think about stress, stress is a part of the human experience, like we said before. So if you are stressed out, if you do have stress, it's not because there is something wrong with you. A lot of times we think, oh, like, I must be, you know, a bad person, or I must not be smart enough, or I must not be strong enough. And that's why I get stressed out so easily. And sometimes it's just because of our lifestyles. If we make some changes or do some arrangements to some of our coping mechanisms, maybe develop some if we don't have them, or improve the ones we have, then we can have a better stress management strategy. And so healthy living means not just eating, but being mindful of what you eat. Not just drinking, but making sure that you drink your water, like, drink it like a fish. And then limiting all non-water drinks, whether that's alcohol or caffeine. A lot of times we think, oh man, I'm so stressed out, I need a drink or 10. But this is the deal. Alcohol is a depressant. So if you drink too much, you are basically trading issues. You got to pick a struggle, and you just traded struggles. And so you may not be stressed anymore, but now you are down. Now you feel tired. Now you feel sluggish. And that's because you traded up and you brought alcohol into the picture. So you want to limit that. Also, avoid drug use. Avoid it. Like, don't do it. like don't do it at all. Whether that's street drugs, non-prescribed drugs, a lot of times, you know, this is the college culture. So I know there's not none of our FSU students doing this because we are royal. We are out here legal. We don't do this kind of thing. But some college students, not FSU college students, but some, they do. They go to a lot of the stimulants to keep them up, to keep them focused. You know, it's hard out here. We got to go to school online, all these virtual classes. So they might be buying Adderall, popping Zans and stuff like that. Like I said, not us, because we don't do that at FSU, but other schools do. But you want to avoid that at all costs, because this is what happens. Like any drug, and including alcohol, if the reward of our drug use, which is our reward sensors, serotonin, dopamine, all that good stuff, quick biology lesson, when we introduce those into our bodies, we're basically telling our bodies that our bodies don't have to make them. And so what'll happen is after prolonged use, our bodies will stop making it. Oh, you got it, I don't need to make it, which is what causes the addiction or the dependence and the issues with drug use. So that's where it comes from. Our bodies say, oh, okay, you got it, I don't have to do it. Then we need more of that substance. And so we want to make sure that we're not introducing any of those harmful things into our bodies, because amazingly enough, our bodies have the capability to cope on their own, to heal on their own. Making sure you sleep. I know it's college, and again, not these college students, not FSU college students, but other college students will get into this like back and forth. I'll hear college students saying, I only got 2 hours of sleep. And somebody else, 2 hours? I only slept 30 minutes. 30 minutes? I ain't been asleep at all. All of it is bad. Stop it immediately. You need to sleep. If you think about sleep, and you think about exercise. Sleep is how our bodies re-energize. Think about your computer. If you turn your computer on and you've never cut it off, it's gonna start getting slow. It's gonna start doing a lot of different things that it doesn't do when you take good care of it. If it never gets a shutdown, it's not gonna restart. It's not gonna do any updates. It's not gonna do any of that. And just like our computer, we've had this happen, where your computer will say, guess what? I'm shutting down in 30 seconds. You better save your work. And you don't have any control of it. It'll be a forced shutdown. Forced shutdown to our bodies is sickness, issues in our body, the shutdown, the burnout. So don't let your body shut you down. You give yourself the space to get a good night's sleep. And exercise. If we are struggling with motivation or struggling with fatigue or struggling with, you know, different stressors in our body, exercise is a natural remedy. It's natural. When we exercise, our heart rates go up. That means we're getting the aerobic and anaerobic things that we need. And we get all of those happy hormones to get going. And so we don't have to go to drug and alcohol use. We can get that from exercising. And then relaxed belly breathing. Sometimes we minimize breathing because it's automatically. We don't have to schedule breaths for ourselves. Our bodies just do it. But if you did what we call relaxed belly breathing, which is also called intentional breathing, then you are able to kind of train your body to relax on demand. So you see this 4, 7, 8. All that is, and you can use any set of numbers. You can use 4, 5, 6, you can use 7, 8, 9. But the first number is how long it takes for you to breathe in. The second number is how long you hold it. And that last number is how long it takes for you to breathe out. So like I said, you can do 3, 2, 1, or you can do all threes. You can do whatever it's. So again, it's how long it takes you to breathe in, which is here's 4, hold it for 7, and breathe out for 8. That's relaxed belly breathing. It takes some getting used to. It's kind of hard if it's not something that you do normally, but just that, just breathing better and using that breathing exercise is a great way to lessen stress or even to stop anxiety. because it's kind of a back way. It's kind of like you jimmy rig your brain to say, hey, don't be stressed right now, breathe. Or hey, can't be anxious, you got to breathe. And that's how it kind of gives you that break. And that's just telling you how it goes. And then we think about, if we handle what we do in our bodies, then we handle what we do in our minds. Healthy thinking is also a process. If it's not something that we are used to doing, if it's not something that's a part of our framework, if we notice that we tend to be more pessimistic or we tend to not be positive at times, then it takes a little more work for us to stop anxious thoughts, to challenge what we call stinking thinking, to prioritize tasks and responsibilities, to change our crowd sometimes, to change the people that we hang out with. Some of us, we do just fine by ourselves, but we tend to hang out with people that may be more negative or people that may be more critical. And so you want to change your thinking to commiserate with what you want for yourself. And you want to surround yourself with those same people. So letting go of self-criticism and comparison. Comparison is the thief of joy. So you don't want to compare yourself to anybody, including family members. A lot of times we say, oh, we're going to compare ourselves to our friends, but we often compare ourselves to family members, siblings, cousins, you name it, because we feel like, man, why they get to do this and they don't struggle, but I struggle and we come from the same place. It's just kind of letting go a lot of that comparison. In the event, though, that none of that works, another way that you can address stress and you can do a better job with managing stress is to come and see us at the Counseling Center. We are located in the Askew Student Life Building. I always describe it as the building with the movie theater in it. We're on the second floor, so if you come through, the movie theater is on the first floor with the cyber cafe and all that good stuff. If you come up on the second floor, we have the whole second floor. So you don't just kind of rumble among us. You can't just be like, oh, I was just in the neighborhood. No, you came up here on purpose because you're on the second floor. We take that whole second floor and we would be there and ready to serve you. If you don't have a clinician, you don't already have somebody that you're working with, you would come in through our walk-in system. That's the way all students engage in services with us. If you come in the door, you will be seen that day. We usually call it walk-ins because that's what it used to be. If you want to see somebody virtually, you would do the same thing. The only difference would be you can come to our office and you can see somebody virtually in one of our secure rooms. If you don't have, like if you got roommates or, you know, you don't have a private space, you can feel free to do that. Come in and you can still meet with somebody even virtually. Or if you want to meet with someone face-to-face, we have started face-to-face sessions with clients. And if, like I said, if you come in, you get seen. So you don't make an appointment. We see you that day. And that appointment that you get with us, it's about 20, 25 minutes. And it's a way for us to help you determine what you need. And so we've got a little bit of everything. As you can see, we've got psychologists, mental health counselors like myself. We've got clinical social workers. We've got art therapists. We've got interns. And we have our Renew program, which is our peer educator program. And they do our non-clinical things. You can schedule with them and they'll help with things like time management, adjustment to college, test taking skills, that kind of thing. And you can find all of that on our website. So all you have to do, give us a call. We will connect you virtually. Or if you want to see someone face-to-face, come on by. Again, we're in the Student Life Building, the same building with the movie theater. And we would love to support you. We are open between 8 and 4. You come in between those times. And like I said, you get seen that very day. Just a few more notes. Our services are free and they're confidential. Not confidential like we won't tell anybody because it's rude. Confidential like we're not going to tell nobody because it's illegal. So we are bound by confidentiality. And it does not matter who calls us, your dean, your program chair, you name it, mama, daddy, cousin, grandma can call. And I have no idea who you're talking about, ma'am or sir. I cannot confirm or deny that because it's illegal. If you don't give us permission to disclose that we've ever seen your face, we will not disclose that because it is legally confidential. And we see you Monday through Friday. And we do a little bit of everything. We have couples, individual, and group. You know, a lot of people sometimes veer away from group, but group is super cool because it really helps you to kind of get not just a reflection of yourself, but it kind of helps you to kind of sit in the seat with others that have similar experiences. In the event that something happens, you get stressed, you have some anxiety, something happens after hours. Usually life likes to happen like that. Nights, weekends, holidays, feel free to give us a call. We have after hour services. You will call that same 644 talk number and our after hour staff will help you with whatever your need or your issue is. And then they'll let us know. And one of us will call you that next time we open and we'll follow up with you. Any other questions or things that you might need, you would get that from our website, www.counseling.fsu.edu. That is the bulk of my presentation to you. Do you have any questions?
Thank you so much for that, Maggie. We did have a question. We are a little bit over time, so we just want to go through this quickly so we can move to our next speaker. But there is a question asking, is there a group counseling for graduate students?
Yes, we have groups for grads as well as undergrads. So all you would do is you would come in again through walk-in, let us know what your needs are, and we will put you in a group, and that will be a grad group. If you're a teaching grad, that's still a possibility for you. You can still have your group sessions, and if you're not a teaching grad. So either one, it doesn't matter. We have groups for grads and undergrads.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was very interesting and very helpful to all of our students here. Next, we are going to move on to our representative from the Academic Center for Excellence, Nate Harris. So Nate, you can take it away.
Thank you, Katie. Good afternoon, everyone that's here watching live, and hello to everyone who might be watching this recording. So my name is Nate Harris. I'm a graduate assistant at the Academic Center for Excellence, which is the department program I'm going to be talking about today. What types of services and support that I think would be good to know about as far as being an instructor, what can help students in times of stress. I am a second year PhD student at Florida State. I'm in the sports psychology program here at Florida State, and I also a TA as well. So this is also kind of things that I think have helped me since I've been here, going into my second year. What's been helpful for me to know about as an instructor that I can let my students know about in times of stress. So let me go ahead and share my screen. How I thought I'd do the presentation today is rather than a PowerPoint, I thought it'd be maybe more helpful to navigate through our website. So you get to see kind of the different types of services we provide and things like that. I'll be trying to check the chat if you have any questions as I'm going through this. But here on Google, if you simply just type in FSU ACE, so Academic Center for Excellence, we are the first website that comes up. And I'm just going to go through. I'm going to talk about some of the things that I think could be very helpful for students in times of stress. So this is our main page, and the major resource that we provide, we have several resources, but one of the major ones that we have is tutoring. And all of these services, by the way, that I'm going to talk about today are completely free for FSU students, obviously. So, all the students that, the university fees, this obviously helps fund ACE. And so all of these services are free for students. You might already be aware of some of these, such as the tutoring. That's typically it's mentioned in a lot of syllabi across Florida State. But I'll start with tutoring because we offer different types of tutoring, which is kind of nice. The first one I'll talk about is we have course-based tutoring, which is kind of the traditional type of tutoring that you think of. And as a note, all the tutoring that's going on this semester is completely online. So we're not actually doing any face-to-face tutoring with students, obviously due to the pandemic, but students can schedule these appointments and they're through Zoom. And so students though can still share their screens. And so it's still very interactive. Students can set a 30-minute tutoring appointment, or a 60-minute tutoring appointment. And the nice thing too is we actually don't have limits on how often students can schedule these appointments. So for instance, if a student wants to set up a tutoring appointment kind of each week with a specific tutor for a class, they can do that. So I'll show you course-based tutoring. And if you click on this, you can see, you know, we have our spring course offerings up by categories. We have the business and finance classes. And when you click on these, you can see the different classes that we have tutoring for. So as you can see, biology, chemistry, we also have computer programming, which is pretty cool because there's not a lot of options as far as tutoring around Tallahassee, around campus for these classes. So we're one of the few areas that have tutorings for the COP classes. We have foreign language tutors, math and statistics, and then we have the other subjects, which includes art, history, economics, so on and so forth. So it's all listed right here. And as far as students making appointments, it's pretty easy. They simply just click on the Zoom appointment student instructions. A little screen pops up that asks for their student ID and their, you know, password, as they typically log in with, you know, Canvas and things like that. And they select what course that they would like tutoring for. And they select their day and time. And so for different classes, we have different numbers of tutors, but like for it. So for instance, there might be a class where we may only have one tutor for that specific course. But then for instance, like Mac 1105, college algebra, in the past, we've had up to a dozen tutors for that class. So there is kind of some limits for certain classes, maybe on how, what times are available. But this is one of the major resources that we have. So going back to tutoring, the other type of another type of tutoring that we have is group tutoring. And I will go ahead and say we don't have the spring schedule up just yet, but I did get an email yesterday actually with the finalized schedule. So I think it's actually supposed to be put up by the end of the day tomorrow. The group tutoring sessions, it's, you know, the nice part about the group tutoring sessions is that you, students actually don't have to make an appointment for these. We have a weekly schedule set up. It is a much smaller amount of classes. So for the course-based tutoring, we have tutors for over 70 courses. Group tutoring, it's typically been about a dozen classes maybe, but it's a very consistent time each week for the course of the semester. So for instance, like an example, ACG 2071, that's accounting. That is one of the classes that we have group tutoring for. Organic chemistry, statistics, 2023. It is a little bit limited number, like I said, of classes. It's not quite as many as the course-based tutoring, but it's a different option for students. So for students that maybe, you know, the one-on-one scenario isn't their ideal or their preference, but students simply can log on. We put the Zoom meeting IDs up and students can log in those respective times. And it's just simply a tutor tutoring a group of students. So, you know, maybe there's only a couple other students, maybe there's a dozen students, but it's a different option for students as far as tutoring. Now, the last type of tutoring I'll mention is study skills tutoring. So maybe for your student, for instance, in the class, maybe they're struggling, not necessarily because of the course material, but maybe it's their study habits. So things like time management, organization skills, how to take better notes in class. These are important skills, obviously, for college students. And it's because they're skills, it's something that obviously can be improved upon. So we do offer study skills tutoring as well. And these are tutors that they assist students not on specific course material, but on these various study skills that I just mentioned. So maybe it's strengthening their time management skills, learning some new study strategies. It's just a nice alternative because, like I said, maybe it's not necessarily the material that the student is struggling with, but perhaps it's you know, one of these study skills that can help them be more successful in the class. So these are the various types of tutoring. And again, it's free. Students can schedule a 30 or a 60 minute appointment. The student instructions are right here. And it's pretty straightforward as far as how to set up an appointment and all that. And so yes, for the study skills tutoring, the students do have to make an appointment for that. But it's just a nice alternative type of tutoring. The next resource I was going to mention, because I think this is especially helpful for students, especially in the remote format. And I know just from personal experience with my own classes, it can be a challenge trying to do homework and watch Zoom lectures from home, especially if you have, you know, families or, you know, roommates, and it can be a distracting environment. I know one thing that you know, was helpful to me is it's nice having that designated kind of work area where students can go in there. It helps them get into a better good zone. And we have study rooms available. So even though all our tutoring is is completely online for this semester, we do have study rooms in person on campus. And so for those that don't know where the Academic Center for Excellence is, it's in the William Johnston Building on the ground floor. My go-to landmark is we are the building right next to Chick-fil-A on campus off of the Landis Green. We're on the ground floor. We have a big computer lab in the area in ACE as well, called the Learning Studio, which is actually open as well. We're open 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. We're also open on Sundays as well, I believe 2 to 5. But so we do have some in-person options for your students that are, you know, on campus, they're in their dorms, or maybe they're in Tallahassee, but they're just off campus. And so we do have the Learning Studio, and obviously we've made accommodations due to the pandemic. So we've really limited the amount of computers. We've obviously appropriately spaced them out. Students have to wear masks in the building. We provide hand sanitizer for students and things like that. So we have the Learning Studio, but the one I really wanted to bring up is the study rooms that are available. So we have 14 study rooms in the ground floor of William Johnston Building as well. And this could be a great place for maybe students, you know, to have a workspace on campus. Maybe it can help them to getting out of the dorm, their apartment, wherever they may be, having kind of that workplace that they can go to and have less distractions. And we also have a couple different types of study rooms. So we have kind of the bare bones study room with a whiteboard, just a table with chairs and a whiteboard wall where with markers students can actually write on the whiteboard wall. And then we have some study rooms that have some technology in it. So for instance, ones with interactive whiteboards or collaboration stations, maybe it has a couple of them have projectors in there, or maybe students are working on a presentation or something like that. And it's pretty easy as far as scheduling these. Now, we do have a limit on these. Students can schedule these rooms for an hour or up to 2 hours. And we also, one of our adjustments for COVID was that it's only one student. So in the past, obviously, students could have groups and, you know, a group of students could come in and have a study room. We've obviously had to limit make that unavailable this semester. So one student per study room, but students that are interested, you just simply click on the study room that you're interested in. And if you scroll down towards the bottom, you can see the book a study room now. And you click on it, students put in their ID, password, and then they schedule their day and time that they would like to use the study room. So this is could be a really nice option for students that are just getting stressed because they just can't seem to get things done at the dorm, their apartment. This could be a really nice option for students to have a workplace on campus. Now, the last thing I'm going to kind of talk about, I'm going to go a little extensively into this, is the Proactive Referral and Engagement Program at ACE. And this is actually one of my main responsibilities as a graduate assistant for ACE, is for this program. It's also known as the Early Alert Program. So what is the pre-program? The pre-program helps students that are experiencing academic challenges. So for instance, and I think this is one of the most, probably maybe most important as a TA, as an instructor, to maybe know about, if there's a student in your class that you're concerned about, maybe they're really struggling in the class, they're really making, you know, not doing well on assignments, maybe they're not turning in assignments, or maybe you've had a student that has just completely disappeared on you. And you've reached out to them and you haven't heard back. So what the pre-program is if you have a student that you're just genuinely concerned about, you know, you can submit a referral of that, a referral for that student to the pre-program, the early alert program. And what we do is when we get referrals for students, we reach out to the student, and it's not to try to nag them or anything like that, but it's really to first off to check in. How are they doing? How are things going for you? You know, are they having any issues or challenges going on, whether it's academically or maybe they're experiencing some issues, you know, outside of academics. And what we do is we really try to help connect the students with really with appropriate resources. So maybe it's with, you know, for instance, the counseling center. Maybe the student says, you know, I'm going through these really these tough personal issues, maybe some very personal types of issues. And we can let them know, hey, you know, the counseling center would be is a great option for confidential counseling and other types of counseling and services, they mental health services that they provide. You know, maybe it's, for instance, maybe they've experienced, like, for instance, a family emergency, and that's why they've just disappeared from the class because they had a sick family member that they had to go back home to. And we can, you know, for instance, let them know about case management services. But it's really a way to help these students that you might be really concerned about. And sometimes it's just letting them know about resources at the Academic Center for Excellence. So on our end, we reach out to the students via email. And we actually, if we don't hear back within a few days via email, we actually make phone calls to the students as well. So we really try to connect just to make sure that they're doing okay, because obviously their well-being is our first concern. Now, this is the pre-program. You know, as far as if you want to refer a student, you can click it down here. There's also some frequently asked questions from the student perspective, the faculty perspective. But if you click on refer a student, you know, this is where you can fill out this information. There's some questions that it asks, you know, why are you referring the student, for instance? Maybe it's attendance. Maybe it's, for instance, they've just been missing assignments and things like that. And then you submit this referral to us. And then obviously we begin the outreach immediately. I want to show y'all one other way, because for instance, I think you know, ease of access is always important. I know y'all as instructors and TAs, you know, have a lot on your plate. So to make this as easy as possible, there's also another area where you can submit this, and it's Canvas. So actually I have one of, I'm a TA for an SLS 1122 class, but I'm going to pull up my Canvas page because I want to show y'all this. This is kind of the default Canvas page. So I haven't really done any major tweaks to it, but I wanted to show y'all that you can actually submit a referral through Canvas as well. So maybe you're on Canvas doing grading these assignments and then you notice, hey, there's this student I might be kind of concerned about. How you can submit a referral on Canvas is I'm gonna show you right here. If you scroll down on the left side, you can see settings. You click on settings, and I'm sorry, I'm pausing. There's a chat. Nathaniel asked who actually checks in on the students throughout the semester to find out. So that's a great question. There's only two people. It's actually me, and it's the proactive referral and engagement coordinator. We actually just hired a new coordinator. Our previous coordinator, she is now in the institutional research department, but we just hired Dr. Samantha Tackett, and she's actually joining. She is moving from California, but she is coming in next week. We are the only two that reach out to students. And we let students know that, you know, this is, you know, so it's only us, it's not getting sent to a bunch of different people. We really try to respect the student's privacy. It's obviously optional. So if the student, for instance, we reach out and the student is like, I'm not interested, they can refuse contact, obviously. And I'm sorry, I was trying to see if there's any other questions. While we talk about actively. Yeah, so I'm the graduate assistant for the pre-program. It's me and Dr. Samantha Tackett. So we're pretty much the only two. But like I said, we let students know about, they tell us what's going on. And we just say, hey, this could be a really great resource that can help your situation. And so And you know, it's really the whole purpose of the program is obviously these students that have these warning signs, we just want to help them succeed. Whenever that they're these issues may be, and part of really the primary is trying to connect them or let them know about all these resources of Florida State, because obviously we're a huge university. There's so many resources. Sometimes it's just, you know, I'm still learning about certain things on campus. It's my second year here. And so it's trying to inform students, let them know, but it's really to try to help them be successful. Dawn says, I personally reach out to my students. That's great too. And I do as well as a TA, but you know, I know too, and just in my past experience, sometimes even though there's those students that just will not get back to you. And so we can be, you know, it's a nice alternative. And you have to think too, with certain TAs, you know, you may have an instructor, you might be instructing 30 students, 90 students, maybe 200 students. We have a finite amount of time. And so this is just an option though for TAs. Because I do agree as an instructor, you know, you care about your students' well-being. I do as well. But there's sometimes a lot on our plates. And so this is a nice alternative. This is a nice resource, I think, if you need some help reaching out to this student. Moving along, if you go down to settings and you go to navigation here at the top, you have these different sections of Canvas, you know, your module section, your syllabus section. But down here, you have all these different pages that are disabled. If you scroll down to early alert and you click the little dots right here and you click enable, it is now up, as you can see, but before you try go away from the page, you scroll back down, click save. You save it. And now, as you can see on my left-hand side, the early alert little tab is there now. You click on this, and it's going to ask you to activate. And I'll show you what this looks like. So just for privacy's sake, I'm sorry, it'll ask you to activate based off your faculty email. But it's very short. So once that opens up, it has all your students in the class and you find the student that you may be really concerned about. You can't reach this student. And then you can just fill out for that student and just submit it. It's very straightforward. Just for privacy's sake, you know, I'm not going to go through it, but for my students' sake. But that is kind of all I have for the resources from ACE. I think the tutoring is a really important resource, the study rooms, and I think the early alert program are three sources that can really help students in times of stress. So I really appreciate y'all's time. And, you know, obviously I'll be around to answer any questions, obviously, at the end too. So thank you. I'll stop my share.
Thank you so much, Nate. That was awesome. ACE is a phenomenal resource. They saved me when it came to GRE math. So definitely check out what they have. All right, so next we're going to move on to Grace Wilson, who is our wonderful Allies and Safe Zones representative.
Hey everyone, I'm gonna also share my screen. So bear with me for 1 second as we get this started. Okay. So like Katie mentioned, I am the Allies and Safe Zones coordinator. My name is Grace Wilson. I use she and her pronouns. So when you speak about me after this presentation, you can say, hey, that Grace, she was really great. That's how you use that, right? Now we know how to use pronouns in general, as far as she and he, but the illustration is really there to say like, if I have a student who uses they pronouns, how do I use those in a sentence the correct way? You use them just as if you were talking about a group of people. So if I was saying Grace and Nathaniel were going somewhere together and they walked across campus together, right? Now you could say the same thing if I use they pronouns. I saw Grace walking across campus. They were headed to Chick-fil-A, right? That's how you use that. So just to throw that in there because I love to introduce that way. So before we get started talking about allies and safe zones, I want y'all to engage with the chat for just a minute, because as we've heard about the Counseling Center, we've heard about ACE, we see like these are pretty direct resources for our students, and we know like exactly why and how we send our students there, right? Allies and Safe Zones is not really something that we send our students to in that way to get support for their queer identities. So I want to know from you all, what do you think that specific queer identities might need right now in this global time of stress and this like national pandemic time of stress where we're online. What do you think that queer students may need from you or from us in general as a university? You can just throw them in the chat. Inclusion, someone they can trust to talk to. Good. Feeling like they belong, recommendations for counselors and doctors, being more visible in course material. I love that one. Yeah, definitely. Someone said it may be difficult to live with individuals who may not be the most supportive. Absolutely. So these are all really, really great reasons that we need to know how to be inclusive of queer identities in general, for biology being more clear about sex and gender, absolutely. So all these are really great. I'm gonna close down the chat so that, not close it down, but I'm gonna minimize my screen so I can get back to the PowerPoint part. So all of these are gonna be really great reasons that our students need us to be more queer friendly on campus. And so I'm really here to tell you about the Allies and Safe Zones program in general in hopes that you all may want to come and engage with the program itself. You may want to bring it into your classrooms, anything like that, so that you and the students around you can just have a better taste of that. Okay, so first thing I want to mention is our website. So I had it listed on the page before. It's safezone.fsu.edu. It's very, very easy to remember and navigate to. So there's a lot of different things that are on our website. So first off, there's information about all the sessions we offer. We literally have a course of like 8 different sessions. So we have our 101 workshop that's just like our basic overview in person that runs about 3 hours. On Zoom right now, the 3rd bullet point down mentions some modules. So before you take that 101, you complete 4 modules. They take about an hour, all 4 together to complete. So the workshop can be about 2 hours on Zoom. We don't want to exhaust people. You can also see our registration for sessions there, that you can get to those. The pre-workshop modules that I mentioned, you can also just go in, and if you all want to do it just as a refresher, just as some new learning, you can go in and access all 4 of those modules to learn more about the Allies and Safe Zones program, to learn about some vocabulary, more about pronouns that I mentioned earlier as well. And then there's some video perspectives because as the coordinator, I'm a white cis woman and I don't hold all of those perspectives. I do hold a queer identity, but I don't hold all of the queer identities. And I want you to hear from people who do. So we have those videos there. Other things that are on the website as well, we have our handouts and learning tools, different things that we would traditionally have paper copies of for you to take and have as resources in your office space or wherever you are working from, if you are in person with us. But since we don't have that option right now, they are all always on the website, regardless of pandemic or not, they're always there. We also have links to different resources that people can use to access, national and local. Unfortunately, we don't really have a lot of local resources for queer support. Allies and Safe Zones has actually become a really big Tallahassee resource. And we have people that contact our program from the wider Tallahassee community, different places in Florida, even in South Georgia, and people will come to our program from all those different places. We also have our map of campus allies, which I will let you know is not totally updated right now because pandemic life. And then we also have an all gender restroom map, but currently we are in the process of working with our facilities team for the greater campus to actually, if you all have ever searched the FSU campus map and you've been directed to the interactive map that we have that you can click on different filters and things like that to see where things are located. We're working on right now assessing all buildings on campus to know where all the all gender restrooms are just on our whole campus, and then putting a layer on that map so that people can click on all gender restrooms and see all of them. The map that is on the website right now is self-reported. So if a department says, hey, Grace, we just put an all gender restroom sign up on this bathroom, can you put it on the website? Absolutely, I would love to let people know about that. But if people don't know that Allies and Safe Zones is a resource and that we have this page, they don't just come and tell me. So we definitely want to make sure that people know about them. So we're working to make that better and make it more campus-wide. From there, what do we offer? So I mentioned our scheduled workshops. I don't have them scheduled for this semester yet because, fun fact, my job just moved from the Student Government Association, Student Governance and Advocacy Office, and I'm now located in the Center for Leadership and Social Change because we have just kind of formed a new equity and inclusion office for student work over there, which is really great because we haven't had one before now. So we're building it from the ground floor up and a lot of things are getting sorted out. But in the meantime, obviously I'm still doing workshops like this, requests, things like that. So I can always be reached for requested information sessions. It's about 30 minutes in a group, in an office setting, in a classroom, anything like that. I do requested workshops for offices and student groups, meaning that I will take the prepackaged 101 material and bring it to you, have everyone on your roster do those modules beforehand, and then we all go through it as a bonded group. We love doing those. The other thing that I can do as well is classroom presentations. So I do one pretty frequently on gender and sexuality as we talk about global perspectives and talking about like what is gender actually according to our social stereotypes, according to biological sex, all of those pieces. So that's a pretty fun presentation that we've really honed in together. And then finally, I am a one-on-one resource. So at any time that you have questions or concerns or you want to know how do I answer this question or how do I talk about this topic with someone, it's never come up for me. I am absolutely the person that you can reach out to and ask that to. Okay, so something else that I hear a lot is, well, I didn't really know that we were doing a lot of queer work on campus. Where do I find all of that? Or how is it happening? Sometimes it's hard to find, right? So I wanted to just give you a brief overview of some of the other things that are going on campus. All of these things almost are things that I am fairly involved in, aside from maybe like the bottom couple. So currently we have a gender pronouns and name committee through the registrar's office, which is a big deal. So the registrar's office being the hub for as students come into our university, what are they greeted with, right? So when someone submits their application to the university, does it have a place for them to tell you what their preferred name is? Because if their legal name is not the name that they use, do we have a way to acknowledge that? Are there diverse pronoun options there so that we know as a student comes into the university who they are and how they want to be referred to? So we're broadening some of those options. And you can see here, we have representatives from HR, from our online learning group, from Title IX, myself, lots of other places as well, to really talk about like even like our FSU Card Center, to talk about where can we see certain names, where can we see biological sex as opposed to gender identity? Because who needs to see biological sex necessarily? There's not a lot of people on campus that do. So we're really fine tuning that as we begin to put some of those things in place across campus. Another one that we are working on right now is the Division of Student Affairs, which is the division I'm under. We just started our LGBTQ plus student life task force that I'm chairing. We have members across the DSA and then student representatives as well. It's about half and half, which is really fun because we hear about the student perspective and saying like, hey, this is what we need you to do. And then as staff members, we're able to actually go and do that work. We also have a lot of student community that's built through the Pride Student Union. I advise the Pride Student Union. They're a really great group of people. They also have three affiliate organizations that work within them that you can think of more as like niche identity groups. So we have Gender Odyssey that is for trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people. We have QDPOC, which is Queer Trans Intersex People of Color. So anyone who identifies in the queer scope and as a person of color has a space there. And then we also have LGBT Theology, which is a really cool group of people who are coming together to talk about the intersections of religion and queerness and how there's always been just kind of a tension there, and really being able to broaden the scope of what that might look like for them. They also have identity nights through Pride. There are, I believe, 6 of them. Sometimes they shift and move around. But those groups are really for niche populations of queer identities. So we have one called Queer Femina Perfecta, and that group is based on the ancient motto of FSU when we were a women's college, which is really awesome. But that group is for women who may identify as lesbian, as women who love women, as bisexual women. Any of those group people can be in that space. CutiePOC and Gender Odyssey also have an identity night that are associated with them. We have a group for people who identify as disabled or differently abled or whatever word fits them the best, and as queer as well. We have a group for people who maybe here at FSU and they're out to their friends and their colleagues and people that they are around, but maybe at home they're not out. So we call that one OHIC, out of the house in the closet, O-H-I-C. And that one is particularly salient right now, right? Because we have a lot of students who are not here on campus with us and they're engaging in Pride spaces, but only behind the locked door of their bedroom because their parents don't know that they're queer. So there's a lot of that happening too. Some other things that we have to offer, Magnolia was talking about the great resources at the Counseling Center. There's also some LGBTQ plus centered groups there. I think they have a general queer group and then maybe a transgender group as well. And there is a Pride liaison on their counseling staff, which is really, really awesome because we stay in good communication so that I can refer people over to her when that's necessary. We also have our gender and sexual orientation affirming non-discrimination policy. So if you didn't know about that, it is a really, really cool thing that FSU has that a lot of places don't. That when we think about Title IX and we think about on the basis of sex and that type of thing that has been really big in the news in the past few years, right? FSU has had for several years in the non-discrimination policy very specifically that we do not tolerate discrimination based on gender and sexual orientation, your name, your pronouns, that type of stuff. Like it doesn't fly through our HR here. I am seeing the chat light up. Let me grab that. Oh, wonderful. So we have many other policies across campus. Some of them are by department and things like that as well. So this is definitely not an exhaustive list, but it gets us through a lot of what we have here. From there. So, Katie, do we have time for questions at this one, or do we want to wait till the end?
I think we'll go ahead and wait till the end for that. And I wanted to let everyone know that I will be, with Grace's permission, I will be linking this presentation on our website along with the recording, so you can look back over a lot of these resources after the workshop. But thank you so much, Grace. And we will make sure we leave some time for questions at the end. Right now, we are going to move on to our final speaker, Dr. Mitchell from the Office of Accessibility Services.
Hello, everyone. And I am super excited to be here. For the sake of time, I'm gonna speed through the slides. Katie does have a copy of this presentation, and so feel free to reach out to her to use this presentation as a resource. But I will kind of go through it really briefly so you all have time to ask any questions at the end. I am Jennifer Mitchell. I'm an Assistant Dean of Students, and I'm the director of the Office of Accessibility Services. So I'll be talking more in detail about the department that I'm under, as well as more about my office and what we do. So the Department of Student Support and Transition supports, connects, and empowers all students to navigate through their academic and personal journey. So we are direct support. We provide direct support to students. DSST is comprised of 6 different offices. We work together to support students and our families here at FSU. Case management is one of those offices. Really good resource to refer students to if they're having emotional challenges, if they need any kind of advocacy assistance with academic, personal, any type of immediate support, case management is definitely the stop to refer students to, because what they can do is refer out to other supports like the counseling center, OAS, other ACE tutoring service. So I would definitely keep case management as one of those areas to know about. OAS is the Office of Accessibility Services, and what we do is provide access for students with disabilities through accommodations, testing support, assistive technologies. We also have accessible transportation for students on campus. And so we have a pretty comprehensive center for our students with disabilities. We also have investigations and assessment. And this is a new office that started maybe a year or two ago, and it and what they do in that office is provide investigative services for allegations of kind of misconduct concerning RSOs. So similar to our student conduct office, but a little different with they do more of the org stuff. And then new student family programs, I'm sure all of you have been a part of that. You know, that is the office that orients all of our new students and families to the university to learn all the wonderful things about FSU. VAP is a really good office to know. It's because that is one of the, with the counseling center, VAP are, they're really confidential. And so they provide free, confidential, and compassionate assistance to victims of crime, violence, or abuse. So if you're working with students and they disclose something, they experience something like this, VAP is definitely a place to refer them to. Withdrawal services is another area in our office, and that office supports students and families when students need to, you know, take a break and do something else, and then, you know, help them come back. OWS definitely helps with that. And so if you're working with a student and you feel like, or they say, I need to withdraw for the semester, we have an office that can help support that student during that time. Again, case management, I do want to highlight this because this is an area that I really want you to know about. So these are some of the things that, you know, it's not limited to, but this is some of the things that case management can help out with. Death of a family member, hospitalization. We send out support letters to faculty members when students are hospitalized, so they know to work with the student during those times. Housing crisis, we have homeless vouchers that we give students, financial hardships. We have some funds that we help students with, family relationship difficulties as well. And case managers are very knowledgeable about all the resources on campus, right? And so that's why I like to highlight that office as really a place to refer students to, because they know about everything that we have on campus and how to get students support and get them to those resources. We also have the Food for Thought Pantry, which is our food pantry for students who are experiencing food insecurities. Students are asked to take only one bag of food per day, but they can come and visit it as much as possible. It is open during this time. We staff it with different staff within DSST. The pantry is located in University Center A on the fourth floor. And we're always looking for a donation. So if you know anybody want to donate food, feel free to do that. VAP, again, is another area I wanted to highlight more. So as well, we have a confidential advocate on call 24 hours a day to respond to any students that have been victimized, students, faculty, and staff, actually. And so we do have a 24-hour call center for that person on staff. We also have different services with emotional support, instructor notifications. So with VAP, we also send out faculty notifications as well for students. Referrals to crisis intervention. A lot of our victim advocates will help out in the conduct process, any legal or medical matters as well. OWS, just making sure that you know that there is an office that can help with withdrawing students. And we're looking to do a lot more with that office to not only withdraw the student, but how can we do more case management to get them back at the university when they're ready to get back at the university, making sure that they're supported throughout the time that they're here. A little bit more about OAS. Again, this is my office. I've been in this office for 8 years. And you know, we provide accommodations and we serve as a resource not only for faculty, for students, but faculty and staff as well. And so if you have a student in your course that you're, if you're teaching a course or instructor of record, and you get a faculty letter or an accommodation letter from our office, we are a resource for you. We can help you understand what those accommodations mean and how they can be implemented in your course, okay? This is just a little bit of data, just so you kind of understand the breakdown of how our students are how they are categorized when they're registered with our office. If you can see, ADHD is top, and it's trending up now that we're in the pandemic. Pre-pandemic, mental health was trending up. It's kind of leveling off now. But definitely, if you want to look at that, that breakdown, it's pretty cool just to see. I'm not going to go into detail about the legal part of what I do or what my office does, but just know that the ADA and the Section 504 are the legal components of the work that we do, right? So ADA protects all students who are registered with my office. They have those protections and rights under the ADA and the 504. So what the laws mean is a qualified student with a disability is one that meets admissions and is, so any student that's coming through the university has to meet admission standards. So there's not a different admission standards for students with disabilities, right? So that makes that student qualified. Once they're qualified, then the student can register with our office for services. A disability, this is how the ADA defines it. So this is the legal definition. It's an impairment that substantially limits one major life activity. And what that major life activity may be is reading. It could be seeing, concentrating with the ADHD, walking. And that defines disability from an ADA perspective. Accommodations are modifications that provide all students with disabilities equal access to students with that doesn't have accommodations. And it provides time and opportunity for the student who has the accommodations to demonstrate equal mastery of whatever material it is. Okay? There is an accommodation letter, as I mentioned before, that if the student is registered with our office, they will request to have that letter sent to you all. And it's a legal binding document between you and the student. It will contain a list of the accommodations. It'll have our contact information on there. If you have questions about the accommodations, you always reach out to us, okay? The thing about this letter is you don't want to provide any other accommodation that's not listed on the letter. So you only provide what's listed on the letter. If a student says, well, I don't have this accommodation, but I do need this. I do think this will be helpful as an accommodation. What you can say is, well, why don't you go back to OAS and do a review? They can do an accommodation review and see if you qualify for that specific accommodation. This is just a sample letter of what you would see. This letter comes directly from OAS. The student requests it and it's emailed out from my office to the instructor on record. So just a little bit about responsibility as an instructor to inform students about our services and program. There's a mandatory syllabus statement that Academic Affairs has. We just updated it. It's really beautiful, very inclusive language. We also have it listed under the faculty tab on our website. So definitely look at that syllabus statement because it's mandatory to have. Also collaborate with course components. Instructors are what I consider, you're the expert in your course. And so we lean on instructors to let us know about the essential elements or the course components so we can understand if an accommodation is reasonable or not based on those components. Making textbooks and syllabus early is so important for a lot of our students, especially if they have learning disabilities or some physical disabilities. Again, provide accommodations that's on the letter. Ensure when we were on campus that accessibility in the classroom and offices is there. Make appropriate referrals. Confidentiality is key in what we do as well. And you always want to hold students accountable for your academic standards. Accommodation letters can be presented at any point throughout the semester. So they're not just going to be throughout the first week because we have rolling admissions in our office. And accommodations aren't retroactive, okay? The syllabus statement, you can look at that. Confidentiality, again, you're not sharing any information with anyone else. If a student issues a letter to you, you can't go talk to your colleague about that student's disability status. That is a violation of their right because they have the right to issue that letter to any professor. So they may issue it to you and not to your colleague. So you don't want to talk to anyone about their disability status. And we do have students give us written permission to talk to faculty or anyone at FSU about accommodations. You can't ask a student if they have a disability, but there are some questions that you can kind of ask, you know, and to kind of read between the lines, and that kind of tells you where to refer a student to. That's a picture of our accessible golf cart. I like to highlight it all the time because it's super cool. It holds a wheelchair. When we were on campus, it was, you know, definitely transporting a lot of our students with temporary injuries as well as permanent conditions. Service animals in the class. I do want to talk about that because a service animal is defined as a dog or a miniature horse, right? So that's the only service animal. It's not a cat. But service animals, we don't require anyone with a service animal to register with our office, okay? There are two questions that you can ask if you want to know if that person has a service animal. One, is this a service animal? Two, what task is the service animal trained to perform? Those are the two questions, okay? And the person who has the animal should be able to answer those successfully. So like if you're in class and the animal's being disruptive, if it's barking, walking around, a trained service animal shouldn't be doing that. You can ask the animal to leave the class. Emotional support animals can be a cat, right? Any animal. But the thing about emotional support animals, they are not allowed in the classroom. It's only allowed in a dwelling, so university housing. So a student can have an ESA. They do have to register with our office, but it's only in the residence hall. Okay. Food allergies is another protected class. It's really brand new. So you may hear from us to just make an announcement that food can't be brought in your class or something like that from us. We work with students on that. In DSST, we have Dean on Duty. So it's all the directors of the six offices. We all share our Dean on Duty week from Thursday to Thursday. So we respond to any kind of students that's in crisis. So if you experience something, you definitely want to contact our office. If you get a concerned email, what you want to do is report it to report.fsu.edu. We get those reports and then we respond to it. Whoever is the dean on duty typically will respond to those reports. That's a really good place to do any kind of concern, student of concern, report it there, okay? There is a faculty and staff emergency guide that is really good guide on how to assist students when they're in distress, as Magnolia was talking about, that not the good stress, right? So this is a really good guide for students as well. This is OAS. We're in the student services building. So that's our picture. And then this is DSST information. And that is my presentation, all 35 slides in 15 minutes. That was good.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mitchell. That was wonderful. And thank you to all four of our fabulous presenters. We really appreciate your diversity of expertise on all these really, really important topics. Okay, so I'm going to open the floor for questions now. We have until about 4:30. And I also want to let all of our participants know that we're going to pause the recording during this time so that you can feel open to ask questions. There is a quick logistics question that I'd like to